There are times where the consumer or employee or whoever will try to commence arbitration and they'll say, "Hey, company, I'm upset with what you're doing. Let's go to arbitration like we agreed." But because it's a private practice, the company will dodge for as long as they can to even go to arbitration. And then the burden falls on the individual person to hold this huge company with resources accountable just to get the bare minimum fair treatment that they agreed to, again, and were kind of strong-armed into agreeing to.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Nest Level Podcast, where we make sense of international news, business developments, and more by talking with experts, business executives, and even amongst ourselves.
I'm Courtney Whittington, a junior international business major at Elizabethtown College.
And I'm Laura Cardona. I am also a student at Elizabethtown College, where I'm majoring in international business and political science. Today, we are very lucky to be joined by an Etown alum, Blair Hendricks. Blair graduated in 2018 with a bachelor's in international business and French. She is currently in law school at St. John's School of Law in Queens and plans to graduate in spring of 2022. So thank you so much for joining us today, Blair.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what made you take that leap from international business to law? What was that driving factor?
So I think it was really two things. I think international business introduced a lot of the world to me. I learned a lot about different business issues that impact people, companies, the world, really. And then as I started to work, I got my first job after graduating, and I wasn't quite sure what exactly I wanted to do as my final goal, but I started to think more about law. And what I love so much about law, especially with business, is that so much of it goes together. And the two things that I like the best about it is I am a person that needs a challenge, and that's definitely the legal field. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of detailed work. It's a lot of constantly doing things, always trying to better your skills and stay on top of things that are changing all of the time. And then it's really impactful work, especially business law. And my particular specialty that I'm really looking to do is consumer law. So I'm kind of on the opposite side of the business game now. So dealing more with the everyday people who interact with businesses, you don't always have, you know, you're not always working on policies that might necessarily impact the world on a global scale, but you're helping people to navigate those policies that are impacting the world. And you are changing somebody's world. You are acting to make the world a better place for, you know, someone who may have been treated unfairly or who may be trying to start a business and wants to make their impact on the world, and you can help them navigate those complex issues. And I think that's what really drove me to law. But I still have a great, great love for international business. And actually, it has helped me a lot in my law journey. So a lot of it really does go together.
Thank you so much for that detailed answer. Along that same line then of consumer law, that's actually why Blair is here with us today. Blair is here today to discuss with us two bills, the Forced Arbitration Injustice Repeal Act, also known as the FAIR Act, and the New York General Business Law 349. Let's start off with that first pending bill in New York. Blair, could you give us just a brief sort of overview of the FAIR Act?
Sure. So the FAIR Act is a bill that is currently waiting to be passed. Hopefully it will be passed, that will prohibit forced arbitration in certain types of contracts, mostly consumer contracts and employer contracts. There may be a couple others that I'm not sure of, but obviously those are my two that I look at the most. So just in a nutshell, I'll describe what arbitration is. So for anyone who doesn't know, arbitration is basically a private trial, if you will. So instead of going to court and, you know, being in front of a jury and in front of a judge, it's the two parties agreeing to meet privately with an arbitrator. So someone who sort of acts as the judge, and you work out a deal amongst each other. And now this is a private action. So it's supposed to be neutral. The arbiter is supposed to be someone who is not favoring either side. And it's usually thought that arbitration resolves issues much more quickly than a lawsuit. Normally, lawsuit, the last thing any lawyer will tell you, they don't want to go to court. Usually they're very, very long process to go to trial. They want to either settle or go to arbitration. So normally arbitration is supposed to be a neutral process. However, there are a lot of problems with arbitration, especially in the consumer sphere. So what usually ends up happening is that the arbitrator is not always neutral. And also in these contracts, consumers are not always aware that they have given up their right to go to court or be a part of a class action. So in consumer contracts, I mean contracts that you would have to sign to get a credit card or to have a cell phone plan or maybe to take out student loans. Even Amazon, if you have an Amazon account, if you have a credit card, you have effectively most likely waived your right to go to court with them if you ever have an issue with them. And the problem with it is that a lot of people don't know that they've given up that right. There's been a lot of studies done. Actually, my own professor, Jeff Sovereign, who does a lot of work in consumer law, did a study with several other scholars and professors showing that most consumers don't actually read the contract start to finish, which of course, why would you? And even if they do read these provisions, a lot of people don't understand them fully. And it's very problematic that people give up their right to go to court. That is your right. And it's not necessarily that you can't waive that right, but they're doing so unknowingly. And that's why we want to repeal this Forced Arbitration Act, because it's not fair to a lot of consumers. And I mean, what kind of choice is it really? Either you're going to give up your right to go to court with your cell phone company or not have a cell phone, especially in today's world, that's just not really realistic. Or, you know, you're not going to be able to take out loans to go to school. That's not really a realistic burden to put on consumers. It's very much in favor of the businesses as opposed to consumers, because it's either sign this contract to have our services and, you know, live a normal, regular life with our services or go without them and good luck.
Yeah, it's great that you mentioned that it's all in that fine print, because no one is actually going to take the time to read all of that, especially with all the terms and conditions that we're agreeing to on a daily basis. I like that you mentioned that sort of power struggle between the corporation and the individual, because the corporations do have the upper hand in this situation. You also mentioned that it has something to do with employer contracts as well. So as an employee of a company, you're also giving your employer the upper hand, and you're sort of forced into this agreement either unknowingly or if you know about it. What's the likelihood really that you would try to get out of it? You might just end up losing your job.
Yeah, it would essentially come down to, I mean, you could try to negotiate it out, but there's no guarantee that you'll be successful, especially depending on the nature of the position. What's also interesting and problematic with arbitration agreements is that they are private. So if you have a court order that comes out or a court decision, that becomes a public document. So really anyone can access and know what happened. So if you have, especially in the employer context, a discrimination suit or a sexual harassment suit, which there are other, I could go on for days, that there are other laws about confidentiality agreements not being able to be enforced for certain types of suits because this is so problematic. But in the employer consumer sphere, if you have a public document that talks about the misconduct of an employer or a company that's using unfair business practices against consumers, it becomes public knowledge. And so other people, in theory at least, can know that the business was a part of this lawsuit, and the business is kind of pressured into changing their practices. In a private suit, that's not really the case. You know, in arbitration, they resolve their dispute against the one person, but realistically, they could continue with deceptive or unfair trade practices against other people until someone else has an issue and thinks to try to commence arbitration. It doesn't become public knowledge the same way that a lawsuit would. And that's the other problem with, in the employer context, if you have an employer that is engaging in bad employment practices and is being unfair towards employers, that might not be, it might not become widely known so that it can become rectified for other employees. It kind of allows deceptive practices and unfair practices to continue. And that's another reason why it's especially important for both consumer and the employment contexts.
And I imagine that it's even more difficult now during COVID. If you are, for example, working at a restaurant and you get COVID, you have to do the isolation for 14 days and you are not allowed to return to work until that test comes back negative or whatever other requirements your employer might have. And now the employer is required to pay you for that time off. But a lot of times what we've been reading and seeing is that they're not paying their employees. And I guess in this situation, this is somewhere where arbitration may come into play, but this arbitration process would make that all really hidden and under the radar. No one would really know this is happening. And also that power dynamic you were mentioning earlier, I can't imagine trying to go up to an employer, especially now in during times of COVID. If you lose that job, that might be the only job that you can have.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why it's so important. And especially now, and it comes up in so many contexts, exactly what you said, if you have that one person and you brought up the power dynamic again, remember that for the average everyday person to commence a lawsuit, to get a lawyer, to even go to arbitration. And a lot of times, and I know because I've actually seen this happen before in some of the work that I've done in various externships in certain cases, there are times where the consumer or employee or whoever will try to commence arbitration and they'll say, hey, company, I'm upset with what you're doing. Let's go to arbitration like we agreed. Mm-hmm. But because it's a private practice, the company will dodge for as long as they can to even go to arbitration. And then the burden falls on the individual person to hold this huge company with resources accountable just to get the bare minimum fair treatment that they agreed to, again, and were kind of strong-armed into agreeing to. Now, there are times where after a certain amount of time has gone by of a company trying to dodge you for arbitration, the courts will say, okay, you can go to court. But it takes time to even get to that point, you know, because for a long time, you know, courts are, you know, the other company will say, well, no, we signed an arbitration agreement. You can't go to court. You have to wait until the court says, okay, they've waived their right to arbitrate. Now you can go to court. And meanwhile, what's happening in that meantime? You have this average everyday person that is trying to get their problem resolved. You know, maybe they haven't been paid by their employer properly and they're missing payment. Maybe they're being overcharged by a business or some kind of subscription service, or I don't know, I'm thinking of examples off the top of my head, but you know, meanwhile, all these costs are building up that this other person has to handle until they can get relief. And goodness knows when that will even be. And that's one of the major problems versus, you know, even though a lawsuit is lengthy, if you go to an attorney and say, I want to file a lawsuit. Okay, now we're going to court. We've at least started the process. You know, it's not all of this waiting around. When do we get to this point that they've waived their right to arbitrate and then go to trial? It's very unfair for the average person.
You end up in, I guess, a state of limbo in that situation where you really can't do anything and your hands are tied. And all the while you risk having your employer just fire you from your job too.
Exactly.
Another reason. And they could continue dodging. I think it's really good that this bill is getting more attention now, and hopefully it will pass.
I really hope that it does. Naturally, that would be a great thing for consumers everywhere. I think also on a larger scale, it would be more heartening for businesses to think. I mean, of course, you know, the business's goal at the end of the day is to make a profit. I understand that. But it would, to me, I would like to see more businesses recognize the inherent power dynamic and the, you know, the inherent unfairness of this practice, and to understand that consumers don't always know, or employees don't always know or have a choice, even if they do know what they are giving up. It's all fine and well to try to make a profit, but I mean, at what cost? You know, if you're thinking about the triple bottom line, this is definitely towards the people aspect of that. So I do hope that I don't know if it will receive bipartisan support. I would like to think that it would, because it's an unfair practice that impacts everyone, no matter what party you are. And, you know, there might be some that argue, well, people have agreed to it. Arbitration is neutral. It really shouldn't be that big of a deal. Yes, in theory, but there have been many studies done that show that that's not the reality of it. And I think we need a law that's going to reflect the reality of it rather than what we want it to be or think that it should be in theory.
Definitely. And one last point on this, you just reminded me when you were talking about the impact of thinking about just those profits first as a company instead of thinking about your impact on everyday people. I personally love to ski, and Courtney has heard me go on and on about skiing. It's just nonstop. I really love it. I love the snow. The way that you can go ski, you can either buy a daily pass or you can also get something called the Epic Pass. And obviously, last year, people got their Epic Passes normally for the 2019-2020 season, expecting to have a full season. And all the resorts had to shut down in March because of COVID. And it's crazy to imagine that was nearly a year ago. Yep. I think it was March 15th when they shut down. But they couldn't ski anymore. And a lot of people had purchased their pass in December, hoping to go in March during spring break, and they never got to go. Or they only used their pass once and they didn't use the full value of the pass. And what Vail Resorts actually did is they said that they weren't going to refund the money. That would be an immense loss for them. And they were slammed with a bunch of different class action lawsuits. And they did come to an agreement with between 20 and 80% discount towards the purchase of a new season pass. So not necessarily a refund, but more so a credit if you purchase a future pass. But the most interesting thing that I saw, and this is before we started discussing the FAIR Act, and this was when I was looking into the different season passes in the contract, and I'm one of the people that will read through the contract because I want to go to law school. And
yeah, I was about to say, if you're reading through the contract, you're probably on the right track.
Yeah. Yeah. I was reading through it, just seeing if there were anything related to COVID. And sure enough, by agreeing to get a season pass for the 2020-2021 season, you effectively gave up your right to go to court, and highlighted in yellow too. So that was kind of nice of them to try and make a bold indication that you were waiving your right. But in any case, you're still waiving that right to pursue a class action lawsuit against this huge company that has all of the power. And they settled with those different class action lawsuits, or they came to some sort of agreement. But now any changes in the future, it's blocked, and you can't do anything about it now.
Yeah. So that also relates to another topic that we had learned about in my contracts class and then discussed a lot more after the pandemic. It's called a force majeure clause, which basically means that if something's so outside of the realm that anyone could have foreseen it happening, the mm-hmm. business cannot be held liable for the loss, or they will not be held liable when you sign the contract. And there were a lot of questions last year when things started to get canceled about whether or not the pandemic would constitute a force majeure, it basically translates to like an act of God event that like, could a business not be expected to repay people or refund people for certain things? And, you know, you had a lot of different arguments on both sides. So you had the business say, we would never have foreseen something like this happening. We had no idea that the entire season would be closed and shut down. But then you also had a lot of people, I know, particularly for colleges and universities, you had a lot of people say, well, I paid tuition to go here in person, not do class online. I deserve a mm-hmm. refund or at least some kind of discount because I'm not getting what I paid for. And then universities are saying, well, there was no way to foresee this. And you did receive the education that was promised. You know, we didn't shut down education in general, just the delivery method, right? Yeah, the delivery method. Although for room and board, it was sometimes a different case. I think for my college, because I was living in student housing and they sent everyone home, and they actually did send everyone refund checks for housing very quickly, which was really nice. But I'm almost certain when I signed up for student housing again, there was probably some line in the agreement that says, by agreeing to live here, you acknowledge the risk, or you assume the risk that you may be sent home and your deposit will not be refunded, or blah, 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 which I did read it. So, you know, I did assume the risk, I guess. But it's an interesting question with COVID, because on one hand, for businesses, I do understand that you don't want to impose so much liability on them, or so much possible liability, that it hinders business activity or economic activity altogether. But at the same time, and especially for services that are so essential, like getting loans, banking, yeah, credit cards, cell phone companies, you know, wireless companies, like that stuff people are dealing with every day. And the issues that they're trying to arbitrate are problems in billing, You know, they bought a product that doesn't work. You know, some kind of bait and switch thing happened, you know, stuff that people could foresee. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so maddening, that it takes so much effort for an everyday person to just get the bare minimum fair treatment. So that's, and you know, like I said, I understand business concerns on one hand, but I think there is a great differentiator in the types of issues that people are bringing up sometimes that arbitration is causing them unnecessary headache for. But that is interesting that you looked in the agreement and saw the for this upcoming season
yeah.
that they adjusted very quickly.
They adjusted so quickly, and it was really very interesting to see that, especially after they were slammed with all of those lawsuits, and they did that to protect themselves. But at the same and at the same time, I feel like the fact that they did highlight it in yellow, and I think there was even a note at the top saying, please look at item 14 in the contract or whichever number it was. I think that is a good thing, but most of the time people are just going to scroll down to the bottom, click the check mark, or try to just click onto the next page. And when the pop-up box comes up, do you agree to the terms and conditions? Sure, because people are busy. People need to go on and they don't have time to read through the contract. So thanks yep. thanks for giving us that background on the FAIR Act.
Keep a watch out for that. Even if you don't read the entire contract, if you're about to sign up for a credit card, flip through and look for an arbitration provision. Just see if it's there. A lot of times it is, but it's always helpful to just know what to look for sometimes. Sometimes just having that little bit of insight can make a big difference to people.
So Blair, thank you for continuing to sit in the hot seat as we kind of segue into this next bill. I'm going to start off by saying I don't ski and I don't read my contracts. A little... Two very different co-hosts you
could
got
be
here.
Changed. Could be changed. We can change the skiing part.
You two, I'll just have you guys bail me out, teach me how to ski, whatever, right? Best lawyers. So just as an intro to the New York General Business Law 349, from what I gathered, Blair, totally interject if I'm wrong here. But the law currently says deceptive acts or practices in the conduct of any business, trade, or commerce, or in the furnishing of any service in this state are hereby declared unlawful.
Yes, I'll break that down a little bit.
Awesome.
So this is what's different from this as opposed to the FAIR Act is this is a New York specific law. So In New York, they have a law against deceptive business practices. And that's what New York General Business Law 349 is. New York General Business Law 350, the one that comes after, also referred to as GBL. So if you hear me say GBL, that's the acronym, bans misleading advertising, I believe, if I remember that correctly. And so basically, the case law that has come out in order to succeed on a claim for deceptive business practices is you have to show that the practice was consumer facing. So, you know, it's not something you made just a deal with one person and they kind of screwed you over. This has to be like something that could happen to a lot of people. So you have to prove that. You have to show that it was materially misleading. So the way that my contracts professor always described material is important, basically. So, you know, something like, if you say, oh, he was wearing a blue hat when really it was a red hat, you know, that's not really that important. It doesn't make a huge difference. But, you know, the difference in saying you will be entitled to a refund versus you may be entitled to a refund could be material, maybe. Just as an example, you know, something that might mean the difference of you not buying this product or not choosing this service or not doing business with this business, something that, you know, would be a make or break kind of factor. And that you were actually injured by it. So, you know, it's not just that you could have been injured, you have to show that you were, which, you know, for a lot of these types of claims, people lost money or, you know, they paid for a service and they didn't get what they paid for. That's usually the easiest of those elements to show. Now, what's unique about New York's business law, as opposed to the business law in a lot of other states, is that it only bans deceptive business practices. It does not ban unfair or unconscionable business practices. So in some ways, New York is actually kind of in the minority with this type of consumer law. And what these proposed changes to the law are trying to do is they're trying to broaden this law to cover also unfair and unconscionable business practices. So you can have a business practice that's deceptive. You know, you're saying, I'm selling you X when I'm really selling you Y, or this costs $349 per year, but you don't talk about other kinds of charges or, you know, other things that
like
go
service fees, things like that.
Yeah, you know, something like that. So that's deceptive. But unfair would be almost like with the arbitration situation, like, we're just not going to call you back. You're not really misleading or deceiving anyone. You never really said anything about it, but is it unfair? Yes. And, you know, to have this, you know, basically make the power struggle between the consumer and the business even worse than what it already might be. And that's what this law, what these proposed changes are trying to change.
Hmm. Now, I read somewhere that this would also provide common sense definitions for what falls under the categories of unfair and unlawful, deceptive, abusive.
Yeah.
How do you see that coming about? Because I feel like there could still be a lot of discrepancy between like what's a common sense definition.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's a whole, you know, topic in and of itself. For a lot of lawsuits and stuff, the whole conversation is what is really reasonable? What does this actually mean? So they put in, I would imagine, I can't say for certain, that they mentioned the common sense definitions because a lot of businesses are concerned that, you know, what is unfair? That could be really broad. If you make that term really, like really broad, that it can cover so many things, businesses might be afraid to provide certain services or might be afraid to do business in certain ways because it might bring liability onto them that they could be sued by consumers saying, oh, well, this is unfair. And, you know, obviously you want something that business owners or, you know, providers and companies will know what unfair means so that they can act in accordance with it. So I imagine that they would have that in place to kind of try to calm down some fears from, you know, the people on the other side who don't want the law to be changed. But of course, you still have a lot of people who are very concerned that the law will be overly broad.
Okay. Now, would you say you're seeing a lot of pushback from businesses, or how would you say they're handling this?
So I don't know if I can really speak to exactly what I've seen. There was one article that I saw that that did make me laugh, that I don't know if this is the common sentiment, but where was it? It was something like, you know, may encourage lawsuits. And then there was one that said extreme pro plaintiff changes to proposed New York law. And, you know, obviously there are some people who may see this as extremely pro plaintiff, which I mean, it's definitely pro plaintiff, but is it really extreme? Mm-hmm. I think given the fact that New York is one of the very few states that doesn't have a law that specifically bans unfair and unconscionable business practices, and instead consumers have to find other claims, you know, maybe you have to find fraud or, you know, other, contractual claims. I think that kind of shows that, you know, it would probably just bring New York up to speed with the rest of the business laws in the other states. But I mean, of course, you're always going to have people that argue that this is extreme. You know, this is not what we want. This is going to hinder business activity, which, you know, you want to be concerned about. But I think it's probably just going to bring them up to speed with the rest of everybody else. But then again, I may be biased as a consumer advocate. So.
Well, couldn't you even say, I mean, even assuming that adding in unfair would be overly broad and too pro plaintiff? I mean, with the current power struggle between the two, it seems fair, even if it were to be too pro plaintiff.
I agree. And the other thing too, and you know, from obviously this is my, I am not a lawyer, I'm not an attorney, but from what I've learned from my, you know, year and a half of law school that I've been through, is that laws like this, when you have a lawsuit and you say that this is an unfair you know, as a plaintiff's attorney, you say that this is an unfair business practice, you have to say why. You can't just say that, oh, it's unfair because it's unfair. You have to make an argument as to why this is unfair. And the court will then consider, is this unfair? And you'll have lots of cases that eventually build up, what does unfair mean under this New York GBL 349, if it were to be passed? So that's what I imagine would happen. Again, I can't say for certain, but it's not, you know, it wouldn't be really like a bright line rule, like X, Y, and Z is unfair. Anything that's not X, Y, and Z is not unfair. Obviously, that's really easy to follow, but that's, you know, there's not always a lot of rules or laws that are like that. There are some like that, but, you know, for a lot of others, you know, it's something you have to be, you know, it has to be an unfair business practice. It has to be, you know, you have to be negligent or something. And then you have to define, well, when are you negligent? You have to make your arguments. You can't just say the other person was negligent because they were negligent. You have to give some kind of backing. And I think that's the other part of the balance of, you know, the business concerns of what is unfair. You know, people are going to have to make the arguments, and not all of them are going to win. You are going to have some plaintiffs that lose, or, you know, people that might try to bring frivolous cases. Hopefully, you know, lawyers are ethically bound to not take frivolous cases, but, you know, of course, mm-hmm. you're probably going to have some that do. And so I think that's part of the balance. And that's what I, in my personal opinion, I think would balance out this broad term of unfair, is you're eventually going to have this whittling down of what does unfair mean. And so, you know, you might have a lot of lawsuits in the beginning, but, you know, again, as a consumer attorney, I think it's time that, you know, you do give back the plaintiffs a little bit of power so that they don't have to struggle so hard just to get the bare minimum fair treatment that they're entitled to.
So this could be like a very silly question, but my lawyer knowledge, all right, good. My knowledge is like maybe a handful of episodes of Law and Order. So just bear with me if this is a bad one. If, you know, these laws that we're discussing are passed and changes are made, and some businesses have to change their current practices, how much time do businesses have to implement those changes?
So I don't know exactly how much time, but the concept of notice and due process is very important. So you, in a lot of cases, cannot have a law that just changes on a dime and they say, okay, now we're doing this. And, you know, they don't make like a huge announcement about it. A lot of times there is like, this law will be effective on this date. They will know. There are times where, you know, some things, like I just heard that the moratorium on eviction was like lifted in New York, and I didn't hear where that came from at all. I'm like, when did this happen? Like, do people know about this? So I guess there are times where, you know, things can change quickly, but for a lot of times, like people have to be put on notice before they're expected to comply with certain laws. I feel like, especially in business law, you know, you have to make sure that people have enough time to adapt their practices. And so I think that would be an important component of, if you are going to change this law, you shouldn't make it like effective immediately. You have to change all your plans right now. But, you know, is that something that businesses should be thinking about and should be looking at their practices and thinking, could this constitute an unfair practice? Which I personally think you should be looking at that anyway. Like, are we doing business unfairly? Like, maybe let's
just
think
some
about
ethical
this.
Standards.
Yeah, you know, but in most cases, you have to be given notice before you're found liable of anything. You know, you have to know what the law is before you're told that you're, you can violate it without knowing it, but you have to know what it is before people hold you liable in like a reasonable amount of time.
Okay. So not a dumb question?
No, not a dumb question.
No, I didn't say, okay.
Well, Blair, I think that we are just getting to our Zoom limit for recording this podcast. And we probably signed some sort of contractual agreement with Zoom as well that we won't take them to court for putting this time constraint on us. But thank you so much for meeting with us today and discussing the FAIR Act and the New York General Business Law 349. This was a really insightful discussion. Yeah. I mean, Courtney, we both just really learned a lot, both in preparation for this, but then also through just looking at our everyday experiences and those of others, seeing that this is really something that impacts you on a daily mm-hmm. basis. So thank you so much for meeting with us.
Great. Thank you both so much for having me. This was a really great discussion to have. Keep doing great things with the IB program. It makes me proud to be a J every day. I hope that doesn't sound overly cheesy, but it's true.
Absolutely not. We love to hear it.
Yes, we do. We really do. Thank you so much, Blair. Thank you. And to our listeners, we hope that you enjoyed listening to Blair's insight on this topic. We want to hear your thoughts. So please connect with us on Instagram at ElizabethtownIB.
So we thank you for tuning into this episode of the Next Level Podcast, and be on the lookout for future episodes of the Next Level Podcast.